The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast for people who miss the Doom Patrol and want to fill that time until it comes back.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also contact us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And we are also members of the Inner Circle Comics Podcasting Network.
And I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks with an X, like a wanker. And you can also get in touch with our Sentient Show Twitter account, which is called Wilfred at WFDpod.
Hi, Wilfred.
Hi, Wilfred.
I'm sure that'll please him. What are we talking about on the show this week, Paul?
I think we're talking about Doom Patrol comics.
Imagine that.
Yes, time. We're looking at the annuals that the Doom Patrol have had. Mm. And there's not many.
No.
But there's enough to make an episode out of.
Yes, thank goodness.
How we roll.
Yes. Anyway, how was your week in comics and stuff, Paul?
My week in comics was the only sane part of my life this week.
Oh, dear.
I did get some reading done. I've been reading a bit of... what I really enjoyed was Deadpool Hawkeye. Deadpool Hawkeye by Jerry Duggan.
Wow, okay. I was not aware that was a thing.
It's a four-issue miniseries, and it basically was everything you like about the Hawkeye comic combined with everything you like about the Deadpool comic, assuming you like things about it. So it was, it's sort of the loser Hawkeye from the Fraction comic and the smart-ass Deadpool, and they team up, and it was very good, very funny. I really enjoyed it, and it was probably a very good companion piece to the Hawkeye series, if you like that. So. Okay. Kind of stood alone pretty well, but it had the same flavour of the comics and had some very funny jokes. So, like the girl from the Justice Department named Dawn, who is called Dawn of Justice. Things like that.
Oh, God. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Wow.
So lots of very good banter, chock full of good banter. What about yourself, Mike?
I had an all right week in comics. I had, I haven't gotten through all of last week's comics, but I'll sum up what I have gotten through as an interesting mix of sex and violence.
Okay.
I got the issue 7 of Grindhouse, Drive In Bleed Out, which the story in that was
Drive In Bleed Out.
Yes, yes, it's kind of like a tribute to the Grindhouse cinema days. And
I thought it was a romantic comedy.
No, not at all. This is the final two-part of storyline in this run of the series, and it was very sexy stuff going on in outer space. Like, there's a reason this issue came in a sealed plastic bag.
Right.
Yes, same with Sex Criminals, although the plastic bag you could not actually see through this time. It was opaque. And Weird Love, my favourite series that reprints old romance comics from anywhere from the 40s to the 70s. And, you know, there was some weird stuff going on there too. So, and then you had the violence in Lazarus and Copperhead. So, you know, good times for all. And Sabrina, oh my God, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. That got really weird. So,
wow.
Yeah, good times. It was a good week.
Keeping things rated M.
At the very least.
Yeah. Hark, is that a ticking, I hear?
I believe you are correct, Sir Paul. It can only be the ticking of the doom clock.
Well, bit it yonder, Mike.
Forsooth and shit. So, looking at the doom clock this week, we can see that the last book of the Doom Patrol that we had was issue 22 of volume 5, the Giffen Clark run, which was cover dated July 2011 and actually went on sale of May 4th that same year. So it's been 4 years and 13 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. How's that make you feel, Paul?
That makes me feel sad and old and a bit tired.
The last appearance of the team was their one panel appearance in the JLU's 8-page sneak peek available online at Comixology and DCComics.com. That was 10 weeks ago.
We're hanging a lot of hope and trust in that one panel, aren't we?
We are. We are. And as we get closer to JLU 13, which will have Robot Man in it, we might do some special stuff on the Twitter account. Ooh. If Wilfred will let us. If he plays nice. But this week in Doom Patrol history, I'm very excited to say that this week, back in 2009, on sale on August 5th to be exact, was the first issue of Volume 5, the very first issue of the Giffen Clark era.
All right.
Yeah, which was the big issue that was a big turning point for me and got me back into the Doom Patrol after being... falling kind of out of love with them because of an issue that we may be discussing later this episode.
Right. And that's that was an action-packed issue, number one.
It was. It was great. They were introduced the team to us on Oolong Island after the 52 weekly series. We said farewell to Grunt and Nudge.
Not Nunt and Grudge.
No, not them. We were introduced to Rocky Davis, who was formerly of the Challenge of the Unknown, and he was now a priest. And we got a new villain, Botfly, who was a scientist by the name of Amanda Beckett, who decided to experiment on human test subjects and herself and create human Botfly hybrids.
You're not a comic book scientist if you're not testing on yourself, are you?
But
only way to do it.
She showed them, yes. Yes, so that was... And it's hard to believe that, you know, that was, what, 6 years ago, and I've... That's where the excitement and the adventure of the Doom Patrol really kicked in for me. What a ride.
You're so damn young, Mike. You hang on to that youth, Mike, as long as you can.
Okay, I will. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're looking at the annuals which feature the Doom Patrol in different ways. And the first of these is the Secret Origins Annual. Now, Secret Origins was a series that basically told the hidden stories about the origins of people.
You don't say.
Which is inherent. But it used to be, it was an anthology, so it was usually a character that you might be interested in, a character you really didn't care about. And the annual being a special... It was annual number one, so it was special. It was the 1987 annual. Mm. It came out on May 26, 1987, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Cover price, $2. Pricey back then.
But well, you get a fair few pages there.
You do get 64 pages.
Whoa.
And some staples. And it was edited by Robert Greenberger, who... he's a guy, I think I've been in touch with him once or twice about the trade program when he was in charge of that at DC.
Okay.
Yeah, but the main story in the book, there's two stories in the book. We're only going to focus on the main one. If you want to hear about the other one, there is a Secret Origins podcast done by Ryan Daly. And, yeah, he'll be talking about this annual in probably about 2 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
So the second backup story is about Captain Comet. We don't care about Captain Comet on this podcast. In real life, I do care, but not in this podcast.
Look, I'm sure it's a fine story. I just, you know, didn't have time to get around to reading it.
So there are 30 pages of The Secret Origin of the Doom Patrol. And it's written by Paul Kupperberg. The artist is John Byrne. John Byrne, noted comic artist and obnoxious person. The letterer is Albert Tobias de Guzman, or Albert de Guzman, as he's often called in other comics. And the colorist is Carl Gafford. Gafford, yes.
Gafford, yes.
All right, Mike, what's this about?
Well, unsurprisingly, this is The Secret Origin of the Doom Patrol, but it's really well done. I must admit, I have never read this before. When Paul and I were discussing about, you know, this issue and getting prepared for it, I realized I didn't own it. So I had to track a copy down, and I'm so glad I did, because it's so well done.
Can we start with the cover?
Well, with the cover, you've got good old Cliff Steele, Robot Man, dead center in the middle of the cover. And on the left-hand side, you've got the old team, which is kind of handy to have the old in, you know, big letters there on the left, with Rita and the Chief and Negative Man. And on the right, you've got the new team. So you've got Celsius, you've got Arani, and you've got Joshua as Tempest, and you've got Negative Woman. And you've got Captain Comic in the bottom right corner, but we don't...
But Cliff exists in the middle because he's the same.
That's right. That's
he's the unifying factor of two teams of the Doom Patrol.
Well, at least, yes.
Yeah, at this point.
Yes. So this issue is basically, I guess, the prequel almost to the first three issues that we talked about last episode, in episode 26, where we have Robot Man coming back to Midway City, to their old headquarters, and he kind of gets trapped and interrogated by the house security system called Waldo.
Wilfred.
Wilfred, yeah. It should have been Wilfred. But yeah, I don't recall Waldo existing before this storyline.
Or since.
It turns out that Waldo is essentially being controlled and also monitored by some scientists at another secret location. And in order to prove his identity, Robot Man has to recount his origin story, basically, to prove who he is and that he's a real deal. To further prove who he is, he also relays Larry Trainer's origin story about, you know, what happened to him and how he got the negative being. And then as the story progresses and he's wandering around the house, he thinks back to Rita and her origin story. So he's not actually thinking about it, he's just, you know, recalling memories of her, and then eventually how that team came together.
There's a lot of origins in this Secret Origins comic.
There really is. But it really is so well done. I think the team of Kupperberg and Byrne did a great job on recapping not just the original team's history, but also the newer team. Because as the story goes on, you discover that the lead agent who's monitoring the house and Cliff as he wanders around it is actually Valentina Vostok. And so she starts recalling her time on the team and how it all came together with her and Josh and Arani as well. So
she got the second-hand negative energy from Larry.
Yes. So it's... I was really happy with the way that this had been done. It was just... John Byrne's art is so good in this. And I think Kupperberg's story is just recaps everything so brilliantly. You know, it covers the team's original formation and the villains that they fought, and it made sense of Arani's story about being Cliff's secret child bride as well, in a way.
As much as it could.
So just the way they covered the origins of both teams in this single story, so well done. There was maybe one odd moment where I kind of didn't quite buy it all, and that was when it was recounting how Josh was in the army and how when he snapped and his power blasts first presented themselves, you know, during the war, and then how he went AWOL and he was basically living on the streets back in America, and there were basically Negative Woman picked up rumors on the street of this man living there that happened to be, you know, the superpower dude. I thought that was maybe a bit of a stretch. But other than that, I will go so far as to say is I loved this issue. It was so well done. The other weird thing is when they were recounting the second team's first meeting and, you know, how General Immortus came and crashed the party and they fought him off, and then they had the Cossack turn up, which is what happened in the 1970s Showcase Presents three-parter that team appeared in. And then it also mentioned the Supergirl storyline that they appeared in, where they were fighting Reactron with Supergirl, except in this, it wasn't actually Supergirl.
No, they've replaced her with Power Girl.
Yes.
I think that's because of the Superman reboot that Byrne did, because Supergirl wasn't part of Superman's history anymore. So then he did eventually introduce a Supergirl, but it wasn't till after this.
Yeah, so that was a bit weird as well. But yeah, it was. I really, really enjoyed this. What did you think of it, Paul?
There's a lot of reading in it. I guess some of it was new to me, and some of it was, I've seen the origins of the team before.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the most blanks were filled in for the 70s team, I'd say.
Yes.
Yeah. And the art is great. I always enjoy seeing John Byrne in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I think that's when he was at the height of his powers.
Yes.
And, it's a good recap and everything. It's a bit of a hokey device that, Cliff is just talking to a machine and just spilling his guts about the history of everything. Just to gain access.
Oh, look, maybe he was a bit freaked out by a sentient robotic house. I'm not sure. So.
Maybe.
But I did like that it kind of reintroduced Valentina, because I think this was almost the formation of Checkmate as well. Because she was kind of saying that, she had to keep an eye on the proliferation of people with powers turning up, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, one could assume that this organization she's working for is called Checkmate, but that's not actually named until, I think, 1988, when Checkmate debuted in Action Comics.
Right.
588, I'm trying to guess, if I remember.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think... For an annual, the fact that the first annual that Secret Origins did featured the Doom Patrol as the lead into their reboot in their own series, I think that was an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
It was so well done. And at the end of the story, there's even, some background matter there that is written by Joey Cavalieri, who's basically, says what they're trying to do and actually shows some artwork for the start of the new series as well, including Cliff on his horse and Kalki in his, supervillain action toy chair thing.
Dodge him car chair thing.
Yes. And it closes that article with the whole piece of art that they use for the wraparound cover of that first issue as well, which is, again, a great piece. So I was really happy with this annual. It was so cool. So cool.
A good addition to the Doom collection.
Oh, my God, yes. It was worth the wait.
Yeah, I think probably my favourite thing about it is the cover, because it has the old and the new unified by Cliff in the middle.
Yep.
Yep.
As it should be. Cliff's the one that's always there. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, that was a Secret Origins annual. Paul, why don't you tell us about... the Doom Patrol's own first annual.
Yes, so we're jumping ahead a bit to 1988, and this is the Doom Patrol annual number one, which is the Kupperberg team. And on the cover, we see a great big green guy with some sprouty sort of facial hair and eyebrows and a great big long ponytail. And he's holding, he's got sort of greeny blue armor on. He's very large. So much bigger than a normal person. And he's holding a great big red, you'd call it a techno axe, wouldn't you, Mike?
I guess so, yes. He does seem to be quite covered in technological armor.
Yeah, and it's quite a dynamic cover by Eric Larson, and he's basically throttling Cliff while the rest of the team are coming at him from behind.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see... Arani, you can see Joshua flying, covered in energy. You can see Rhea Lodestone, as she was called, with her magnetic aura around her. And at the back, you've got, Scott just standing there.
Poor Scott.
Poor Scott. Yes.
Look, he looks really concerned, though.
he does.
I'll give
he
him that much. Road.
He looks like, what am I doing here? And the story inside is called Public Works, and it's by Paul Kupperberg. The penciler is James Fry. The inker is Al Vey. The letterer is Gaspar. Colorist is Nancy Houlihan.
Mm.
And Robert Greenberger is still the editor on this one.
Mm.
Yes, and it starts with a protest about the Doom Patrol. So this was an ongoing plot where the Doom Patrol, shortly after the issues we covered recently, they set up in Kansas And there's a bit of dealings with the local city council about their presence.
Yes.
But there's also, we've seen a little bit of them unrest being agitated by some third party, a bit of payment to make people protest. And so there's a lot of people protesting and Doom Patrol go away signs, etc. And yes. The Doom Patrol are basically holed up inside and watching this on TV and, you know, arguing about it and getting upset with each other. Yes, we see a very Josh with his hair looking like a motorcycle helmet in this case.
Yeah, he's got these white temple stripes in his hair.
Yeah.
It's a, yeah, okay.
It's kind of interesting. He looks very old here, doesn't he?
He does, yes.
Yeah, he looks like he's in his 50s. He could well be. Yeah, but, you know, the team is fairly on edge. And yeah, Josh wants to run tests on Scott because Scott's power's been acting weird lately. Yeah, then we cut across town and there's police have been arriving on the scene of a disturbance and it's a great big... This guy on the cover, he's got his axe and he's smashing things up. And they tell him to drop the axe and he turns around and... He says, police, huh? We'll just have to strut our stuff. Show off the power of Mad Axe, the destroyer. And he's probably one of those people who gets spit all over his mouth when he talks.
Possibly.
Yeah, and then he starts hacking into the police. There's pink energy all around the axe, but it looks like he's really killing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that was red, it would be the goriest panel ever in the history of the Doom Patrol. Because one guy's getting slashed in the neck, one guy's getting slashed in the gut, and one guy's getting slashed across the chest.
But we'll just cover it up with pink energy. Yeah.
But there's never any overt, these people are getting killed.
No.
So it's ambiguous. And no one really acts like this guy is a murderer for the rest of the comic.
No.
Then he runs outside, he blows up a power main with his axe and a gas main, and the police fire at him, and he absorbs the bullets, they all bounce off him, and then he starts chucking vehicles around. Looks like he slices a guy in half, so it could be different. It's hard to tell, isn't it?
Yes.
Yep. And the police get on the great big monitor, as is the Doom Patrol's favourite method of communication, and ask for their help. And Arani's like, you know, can't you do this yourself? You're the cops. You know, very clear that Arani's mission is about finding the chief. It's not all this, you know, the Doom Patrol aren't, you know, heroes for hire or public servants in her mind.
Yeah, that was always her shtick, and that was mentioned in the Secret Origins annual, that was her whole reason for putting the team back together, to find Niles and nothing else. So
yeah. She's
very single-minded.
But then she says, oh, well, hopefully this can be done quickly. I'll send the team out and they should be able to take care of it. Then we cut to the LexCorp building in Metropolis. Now, this is when, this is the 80s Lex Luthor, who was a business, evil businessman at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's discussing his planned trip to Kansas and his secret plans for what is going to happen there and his other business and things, you know, he's up to stuff, basically. He even does like a classic villain, you know, hand... You're clutching his two hands together and saying, excellent. Yeah. It's very Mr. Burns, isn't it?
Excellent.
Yes. Back in Kansas City, the Doom Patrol are getting briefed by a policeman, and then they run into action, and Cliff is urging the younger members of the team, the new additions, to hang back and let him see what's what before they come charging in, reminding them they're inexperienced, etc. There's a cameraman who's got himself on a roof nearby who's in position and is going to get some great footage to make his career. And, yes, Cliff confronts Mad Axe, who's chopping a truck in half with his axe. He said, yo, Mad Axe, stop that already. You're making people nervous. And then Mad Axe starts to run at him and then suddenly stops and says, ah, you've come at last, Robot Man, and starts acting all chummy with him.
He's actually shaking hands with Cliff,
which is unfortunate because this is being filmed by that cameraman. And then he starts ranting how they can trash Kansas City And Cliff starts fighting him and punches him in the face, making his nose bleed. And that is the cue for Mad Axe to start swinging his axe in a mad way.
He's got an axe and he's mad. Literally.
Yeah. And, Cliff tries to do the old police arm, strong arm him behind mm-hmm. his back. And he gets electrocuted, and then Lodestone comes zooming in. So she can fly with her electrical, her magnetic aura around her.
Of course.
Yes, and she flies in and she gets flung away before she can make him weigh a ton with her magnetic powers. So, and then Scott runs in and he's got the power to melt things by making his hands super hot. But he gets some really bad feedback off the axe and that shuts him down.
Poor Scott.
Mad Axe runs off while the team are left nursing their wounds, licking their wounds, looking sad. Then we see that the media have picked up on the story and intimated that the Doom Patrol might be in cahoots with Mad Axe, which is such a bummer for the team. Yeah. And the team has a nice little theorizing about who could be behind us, and we get a nice little flashback of some of their villains, like Mr. 103, Immortus, Madame Rouge, General Zal. Cliff points out that they're all dead. It's got to be somebody else. And Arani is reminding them that this doesn't matter because she just wants them to find Niles.
Jeez. One track mind.
Sick of her saying that.
Yes.
But the news goes on to talk about Lex Luthor coming to make an endowment to a hospital. And he wants to visit the Doom Patrol while he's in town because they are a client of his because of all the LexCorp equipment. So they obviously don't know Lex Luthor the way Superman knows Lex Luthor.
Hmm.
That he is an evil person.
Yeah.
Josh goes for a walk past the protesters who are abusing him, calling him a freak.
What's weird here is that he no longer has the white hair along his temples.
Yes.
It was there in, you know, one panel before.
He's done some sort of rinse. I don't know. Yeah, and he visits a Vietnam memorial, and it makes him sad. And then he thinks about Scott and Scott's condition and how it's probably brought back his leukemia, and that makes him sad as well. So, then we see like a city council meeting where the Doom Patrol, represented by Arani and Val, are in attendance. And there's a lot of tension there. And how about the damage that the Doom Patrol bring to town and the attacks? And the Doom Patrol assuring them that Mad Axe has nothing to do with them and that they will bring him in to prove it. And then Cliff bursts in and said, "We've got an emergency, Mad Axe." What's he doing? He's going mad with his axe.
Right. So he's got an axe, does he?
Yeah, and he's mad.
Right.
He's reckless with his axe.
Oh, God.
So they swoop in to fight him, and he really beats, like, you shouldn't be beaten by a guy called Mad Axe.
No.
So he, Negative Woman, is her energy is flying in and he cuts it in half, and she has to go back to Val's body or she's going to die. Cliff runs in and he gets slashed in the tummy. Josh is trying to blast, and Cliff gets in the way, and then some red armored troops turn up with, you know, sci-fi looking weapons. And the team start blasting them to stop them getting involved because they look like they're on the side of Mad Axe. But in classic Doom Patrol fashion, these troops aren't there. It's a visual trick.
Oh, no.
Being generated by a guy in a helicopter holding a device which says LexCorp. Who could be behind this trick?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Anyway. So the team is still grappling with Mad Axe. Cliff chucks a car at him that chops in half just by holding up his axe.
I love how a few pages earlier, you know, the city council of Kansas City were having a go at them about the damage that they'll bring to the city. And some of these panels have a lot of damage to public property in them.
Yeah, that intersection won't be running nicely this afternoon when the peak hour hits.
No.
Yeah. And Mad Axe soaks them all with water and electrocutes them and runs away.
Mm.
Yes. And then we see the Doom Patrol back in their headquarters. Joshua's white hair's back.
Yep. His rinse ran out.
His rinse got washed off, I think.
Yep. Of course, he just got hit by the burst water main.
Yeah.
That's what got rid of the rinse. There we go.
And Scott's reading the paper about how the team are crap, and he does an 80s reference. I think I know how Gary Hart must have felt. Gary Hart was a politician who got caught with his pants down the wrong spot, if I remember correctly. Then we see Lex Luthor is at his charity meeting, getting given the key to the city, and he basically says thanks and leaves straight away because he wants to meet the Doom Patrol. And then he comes to their headquarters, which is filled with unnecessary equipment from the look of this panel.
It's like gigantic walls. Just
yeah. What does that thing on the roof do with all the buttons? I don't know. Then suddenly they get an alarm. The big monitor flashes to life. It's the policeman telling them that Mad Axe is on the loose again. Again. And we see Lex Luthor having a little thought bubble that says, right on schedule.
Mm.
Could he be connected?
Probably.
Yeah. And then he slaps a little secret device underneath one of the consoles and says, well, you guys better go and deal with it. And they run off. And Larry Traynor, who is without any negative energy at this point, has grabbed a flamethrower or something.
Yep.
So he's joining the fight. He's not going to be useless.
Sure.
Yeah. The Doom Patrol ran out past the protesters. Lex Luthor returns to his limo and then to his some hotel or something with lots of monitors and equipmant. The team start finding Mad Axe. Then one of Luthor's men has gone to the guy in charge of the protesters and give him this little device and said, could you go and put it on the roof? He said, no, I don't want nothing to do with no bomb. And he said, gives him a great big roll of money. And he said, oh, yeah, cool.
Yes.
To do that. Yeah.
Just an easy $3,000 for his trouble. So, you know.
Now, the fight with Mad Axe is heading towards the Doom Patrol headquarters, isn't it? Mm. So, yes, the team are doing all they can. It's mixed results, fair to say. The protesters start running in terror as the Mad Axe and the Doom Patrol burst through them into the Doom Patrol headquarters. And Mad Axe is suddenly overloaded with power. And he starts to get upset.
Just a bit, yeah.
And glow pink. And then he turns into, he's like an irradiated skeleton for a sec. And then there's a great big shadoom. And he is destroyed.
Mm.
Yes, and we see that Lex Luthor is there and saying, you know, see the difficulties I have creating my own super beings? We do see. Yeah. Mm. So this is, we're starting to see that his plan involves getting the Doom Patrol to work for him somehow. So the Doom Patrol are inside their headquarters. There's a great big crater where Mad Axe used to be. Then suddenly their headquarters starts attacking them. So lasers start coming out of the walls. And it's mayhem.
Hey, you mean to tell me all that LexCorp technology that they somehow got is attacking them?
It's untrustworthy LexCorp technology.
I wonder how that happened.
Yeah.
Very sus.
Yeah, so the team are basically trashing their own headquarters now, trying to solve it. Josh starts blasting through the floors. So they're obviously a 5-story building. I didn't know that. And he gets to the roof and then finds those guys on the roof trying to plant that thing. And they're realizing that the building's blowing up around them, so they want to get off. Joshua has to start rescuing them. So he ferries them up to a nearby helicopter. Val is trying to short out the lasers. Scott's melting things. Lodestone is magnetizing things somehow. Yeah.
I think she's forming a magnetic barrier somehow around her and
okay, yeah,
people near her to protect them from the lasers. So there's a fair bit of mayhem going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Joshua's up in this helicopter and he's found the guy who has the device given to him by the LexCorp lackey. He's carrying him up. Yes, so he's worked out the connection. He tells Negative Woman, who flies up to Lex's jet, and she basically confronts him and says, you know, we know that you brought this equipment and you've been sabotaging us. And he says, well, you can't have any recording devices on you because you're a negative energy being. He said, you can't
well,
prove it.
Of course.
It. And he said, "You would, if this my plan had worked out, you would have worked for me happily because you'll be discredited. And, you know, then you'd be my team of people." And she says, "Maybe everyone does have a price, Luther, but even your wealth cannot afford ours. Unlike you, we come with a conscience, and you will never understand that." And then he has a laugh as, "Ha ha, how easy to take the high road when you have nothing at stake, eh?" And then he's fake laughing because as soon as she walks off, he says, he looks all sad and says, "Witch."
I bet you he meant a different word.
Yeah. Then we see that the Doom Patrol have completely wrecked their headquarters.
Pretty
and
much.
They're wondering what they can do, and at least they don't have to work for Lex Luthor. And then there's a second story. Now, let's talk about the main story. What did you think of it, Mike?
I thought it was okay. I thought Mad Axe was a bit... well, they've had better and worse villains, I guess. But yeah, he harkened back to the old... one-and-done villains from the 60s for me. You know, just this bizarre villain that, you know, with a weird name and, you know, very little information about him, turned up, caused havoc and lots of public damage, and the team wins the day. So, yeah.
My feeling about this is the stakes in this are pretty low.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like... I like my annuals to be kind of special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a story that couldn't fit anywhere else. This could easily have just been a regular issue.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And it might have been better being a bit shorter.
Yeah, I think you're right. It could have easily have been easily been put into the main series itself.
Yeah.
Rather than as an annual. So.
Yeah. And I mean, there's three big attacks by Mad Axe that could easily have made it two. Cut out a little bit of the guff. Yeah.
Yeah. And Luther was, yeah, it was kind of interesting in this, but, yeah.
Well, it's a bit of a dumb plan.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I'm going to hire protesters, I'm going to send, you know, fake supervillains to Kansas to trash the place, to make the Doom Patrol's public image so bad that they'll come and work for me.
Yeah.
Like, he could have... probably got them to work for him in the first place and just lied about what he wanted them to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
So it was an okay story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the art's quite good. I mean, the destruction's quite...
There's a lot of destruction in
there. There's a lot of destruction.
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking Man of Steel level destruction here, but, you know, pretty close.
We're not, no.
Yeah. Anyway, what about the backup story in this?
Yes, this is called That Daring Young Woman on the Flying Trapeze, and it's a lodestone story. So Rhea Jones has found a circus outside of Kansas City. Now, okay, so it's written by Paul Kupperberg, the regular writer. The artist is a penciler by Randy DeBerk, who I remember he did some Starman issues, the Will Payton Starman series.
Okay.
And I think he did some Dark Stars.
Oh, okay, yes.
Remember and love the Dark Stars?
Yes, vaguely.
No, we don't. Kyle Baker was the inker. He's quite a distinguished name.
Mm.
Bill Oakley was the letterer. Tom Zielko was the colorist. Or Zielko? I don't know. And Robert Greenberger was the editor. And it's, yes, she's found a circus outside of town. Now, there's only three plots you can do with a circus. And one of them is the evil person at the circus, the corrupt person trying to get rid of, take over the circus, or the whole circus is evil. So, which one is this? This is the corrupt person trying to take over the circus, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an okay story. You get a little bit about Rhea's personal life, her background. Yeah. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, it's...
What do you think?
Yeah, I do like the art style on this. It does remind me of, you know, DC Comics in general at this point in time, you know, sort of the mid to late 80s artwork.
Yeah.
Something different about it, which is really cool. But yeah, the story, you know, she goes and sorts out some bad stuff happening at a circus and, you know, we do learn a bit more about it. But yeah, it doesn't really do a hell of a lot more.
No. I mean... it's not really compelling characterization that makes you love her or anything. It's just, you know, this is just something that she does. And she concludes that, you know, she's got a place to hang with the Doom Patrol at the end of it all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because basically her background is she was in a circus before she joined the team, and she's quite an acrobat. And yeah, so it's, that was kind of interesting. But can you recall a story of involving Rhea that you did ever find compelling?
No. No, I mean,
before she went into the coma and became the bizarre alien space star child type thing.
Yeah, well, she's not really Rhea at the end of that, so it's not like it's the same character. So.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I always feel like this Volume 2 of Doom Patrol, before Morrison took over, there were a lot of missed opportunities with the characterization. They could have gone deeper and, you know, really explored some of these people. And you know, I feel like before we got to know a lot of them, that it was all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that invasion thing happened and, you know, half the team were gone.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not the greatest annual.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of not the greatest annual, what are you talking about now?
God. Okay. Here we go. Our final book that we're looking at tonight is Doom Patrol Annual Number 2 from 1994. It went on sale, actually, November 16, 1993, for the cover price of $3.95 US. Again, 64 pages. The writer on this was Rachel Pollack. The artist was Mark Wheatley. Letters were by John E. Workman Jr. Stuart Chaffetz did the colours. And Lou Stathis was the editor. Now, I'm going to just get this out of the way. This comic is my least favourite Doom Patrol issue ever.
Wow.
This is... I love the Doom Patrol. I hate this comic.
I've not had the pleasure of this one, Mike, so you will have to be my gateway into enjoying this.
Okay, well, I'm going to close the gate, and that's our show, folks. Okay. All right. What verdict? This was when the Patrol had well and truly moved into Vertigo territory. They became part of that imprint. And what the powers that be at Vertigo decided to do in 93-94 was actually have a crossover across all their annuals for that year. And so the crossover story was called The Children's Crusade, in where there was a magical, mythical land called Free Country, where children were safe from harm from adults and never had to be worried about being abused or anything and never got old. But Free Country was getting overcrowded, so the kids that ruled it decided they would go and find these children of power, which included Dorothy Spinner from the Doom Patrol. The other children also included Maxine Baker from Animal Man, so Animal Man's daughter, Tefe, I believe it's pronounced, Swamp Thing's daughter. You also had Timothy Hunter from the Books of Magic, and from another series called Black Orchid, there was a child, kind of half plant, half human, Black Orchid, who, you know, I was reading the Black Orchid series back in the day. It was kind of interesting, but I think it kind of disappeared after a few issues. Anyway, these children of power are being kind of coerced to come along and help Free Country become more powerful and more stable to help protect children. Meanwhile, the two dead boy detectives from the Sandman, they're sort of investigating why all these children are going missing. So they were the central characters in the bookend issues of this crossover, which, so there was issues 1 and 2 of the Children's Crusade proper. You then read through all of the annuals to follow the story, and then it all wrapped up. In
then you killed yourself.
Pretty much. Okay, I've never actually read the second issue of Children's Crusade. I lost interest in it after this. I did read the first one. I read the Black Orchid annual because I was reading that series at the time. I read this Doom Patrol annual, and I'm fairly certain that this issue actually put me off the Doom Patrol after I finished reading it.
Wow.
That's That's how bad it was. And look, I will admit, I didn't actually get into the Doom Patrol until Rachel Pollack had started and taken over from Morrison. So, you know, there weren't that many issues between her starting and this coming out, because the setting in this kind of ties into, I think it was about issue, I want to say 64-ish, so sort of kind of in the middle of Pollack's run, where there was a generational war between these wild feral children, or feral girls, actually, and an older generation, basically senior citizens fighting wild feral children who lived in a wood. So, because the feral girls, they make an appearance in this storyline, and Dorothy Spinner has kind of befriended them and wants to play with them in the woods, and they all get kind of talked into going to this magical free country, which is how they get there. There's lots of fighting and childish silliness going on, and yeah, it's an impossible story to follow. You get the main idea of the story, that these children are being taken away to a magical and safe place, because there were kind of themes of protecting kids from adult abuse kind of throughout the storyline. But when the kids get there, of course, you know, more fights break out, because Dorothy, being the ape-faced girl that she is, and, you know, she just is, she gets teased by the girls that she meets there in free country. So, of course, the wild girls, the wild feral girls that she's befriended, you know, try and stick up for her and just, you know, make things worse. So Dorothy decides she wants to get out of free country. There's also the sort of plot thread that Dorothy is beginning to... She's having her period during this issue as well. I'm just going to say it.
I'm just going to say it.
It's out there. We're all friends. We're all adults.
It's like a nice country house that's got period features.
Sure. So at the start of the story, Dorothy is, you know, complaining that she's having her period. So, and, you know, she's still having her period when she's in free country. And, of course, the children there are saying, well, if she's experiencing that, she's not a child. So we're basically going to do what we can to get out of free country. So, of course, it just goes from bad to worse for poor old Dorothy. Yeah. I liked most of Pollack's stuff, but this is not a good story. And the art as well is, I am not a fan of the art in this. I'd go so far as to say the art is atrocious.
Okay.
I even feel like the art actually gets worse as the issue goes along.
Wow.
Everyone has a different style and a different way of doing things, that, but this is just so unappealing and just, yeah. And I mean, I know, you know, the later issues, the very later issues in Pollack's run has Ted McEvran who doing the art, who is a really unique style, but even that's more enjoyable. Even his bizarre abstract style is far more enjoyable than this. It's just... And I swear to God, this is what put me off the Doom Patrol back in the early 90s, because it was just such a bad comic. So bad.
Okay.
So, interesting that they've never had an annual since. I do also think that they were kind of burdened with continuing this story of Children's Crusade, which, you know, I never had any interest in picking up and completing, but apparently in September they're releasing, I think, a hardcover version of the two-parter. So it's a bit interesting that they're not including the annuals in that story as well.
Yeah, I think I heard it's Neil Gaiman's first part and second part. I don't know if he wrote the second part, but there is a little bit of new content to bring the story together a bit better.
Yes.
It's, you know, sort of, hey, Neil Gaiman fans, here's something new, finally. Issue 5.
Oh, God, don't get me started on that. Jesus. I think it was a nice effort of Vertigo to try and do a crossover. I think they failed miserably because it's not a great story. And unfortunately, the Doom Patrol got wrapped into it. And it's... I loathe this issue as much as I loathe Mento.
One might assume that the writer didn't enjoy it either, because it sounds like it's an editorial-driven thing rather than a creatively-driven thing for her.
That's the thing. I think Rachel Pollack has done better than this, and it's such a disappointing read. Words fail me, Paul. Words fail me.
Into the bin with it.
Back on the shelf. It's still the Doom Patrol. It's interesting in its bizarre grotesqueness. So it has to stay. I mean, I also like it that it's set in a different era of the Doom Patrol again, because it's when the chief is basically a disembodied head, and they have George and Mary and the bandage people, and they're living in the house full of sexually remainded spirits. It's when the Doom Patrol got really, really, really weird after Morrison stuff. And which I know some people say it's basically Pollack trying to out Morrison, but I think, you know, there was some interesting stuff there until they did this annual. It's just so bad. It's basically a solo story for Dorothy. You get a little bit of her interacting with Marion at the start, and then when she finally figures out how to do the magic portal to get out of Free Country, she basically crash tackles into Cliff in the middle of the Doom Patrol's house. And they're sort of saying to her, "Well, where have you been?" She said, "Oh, I was only gone for a few hours." And they're like, "No, you've been missing for weeks." So it's like, okay, that was kind of interesting. Of course, the Feral Girls have also made it back through, so I'm not quite sure where in Pollack's chronology this fits in to their dealings with the Wild Girls, which we will get to one day, because I actually didn't mind that generational war storyline. But yeah, if you haven't read this already, Paul, I would not recommend you track it down. I've basically got it for completeness sake, for my, collector's OCD.
You have a problem, yes.
No. Yeah, clearly, yeah. But it's of the three annuals, this is the worst.
Yeah.
This is a disappointing mess. And it pains me to say that about anything related to the Doom Patrol, because I think everyone knows how much you and I love the Doom Patrol. So
we do tell them.
We do. So we get the show.
At the end of all this annual reviewing, we could say that we like the Secret Origin ones the best.
Yes, I would say. I definitely agree. And not just because it's the most recent Doom Patrol thing I've read that I hadn't read before, but Secret Origins. Kupperberg and Byrne do a fantastic job in that.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it for Doomsplaining. Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And this week, we asked everybody, what's your all-time favorite comic book annual? So, we heard from a few people. This was harder for some people. I think some of the newer listeners, people who haven't been reading comics very long, didn't really want to get involved in this one. Anyway, we heard from Carl D. Smith, Carl Smith Writer on Twitter. And he said, easy, G.I. Joe Yearbook 3, when Serpentor explains how in his past life he invented pizza. And, he included a picture of the cover, which shows Snake Eyes tied up while, Scarlet and...
Storm Shadow, wasn't it?
Storm Shadow.
Yeah.
White Ninja.
White Ninja.
White Ninja. They're fighting, and there's some good symmetry on the cover. It looks exciting. I have read those G.I. Joe stuff a long time ago and really enjoyed them.
Cool. We heard from Etrigan Frack. At Fractures. He also said, easy, Avengers Annual 10. It's a glorious comic. And the cover has, of this, which he sent us a copy of, has so much going on. It's got, Spider-Woman doing stuff and Iron Man looking knocked out and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and an appearance by the X-Men. So it's like, holy geez, what wasn't in that issue?
I love those covers where they had the boxes of everything that goes on inside.
Yeah.
I remember there's a lot of Superman covers that do that.
Yeah, it's great.
We heard from, his name was Brian, who's at PandasonArt on Twitter. He said a West Coast, he's not really sure, Avengers Annual, which was every Avenger ever versus the Zodiac and an enemy within. And in spoilers, it was Quicksilver.
I don't need to read that.
That sounds cool.
We heard from at Ostrakus1, who this week has gone by the name of Live at New Chime Trek.
Now, these, I think he's doing anagrams for his name.
Yes.
Yeah, his real name is Kevin.
Kevin, yeah.
We don't know what the rest of his name is.
We'll get there one day. We'll get Wilfred onto it. He's great with puzzles and shit. Kevin said, Amazing Spider-Man Annual 21. It was the first time he really saw a big life-changing event occur in a comic character's life. And, in all caps, fuck JMS for undoing it.
That must be the wedding. The wedding of Peter and Mary Jane.
I will guess so, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So everyone take a drink for the fuck JMS comment. Anyway.
Is that added to the list now, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. We have Shmobi1, who's at Shmobi1, and he said Secret Origins Annual Number 2, 1988. So that's the one after the one we
did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Ooh.
Coincidence. And he said, Barry turns into a lightning bolt, goes back in time, hits a chemical rack one day. Mind-boggling. Whoa. I know this story. I've seen this reprinted in another book. And it's basically Barry was the lightning bolt that hit Barry.
Wow.
So after he turned into energy in Crisis on Infinite Earths, he turned into a lightning bolt and went back in time and hit himself.
Wow.
That's cool, isn't it?
That's pretty cool, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I've got that in a Secret Origins trade, which collected a few stories.
Cool.
Mm.
Yeah. We also heard from Karthik Kakarala, who this week said, all right, I'm going to go with New Mutants Annual Number 6, Days of Future Present Part 2.
I think that's a very Liefeld-y one. When the New Mutants,
okay.
So a bit of, you know, Cable and pouches, Domino and things.
And no feet.
No feet.
And grimacing.
Tiny ankles.
Yes.
We heard from Will Fish. And he said, Action Comics Annual Number 1, a superb comic fun by Byrne with art by Art Adams and Dick Giorgiano and inking by Scott Tease and colorist by De Guzman. And I have that annual. It's very cool. It's got Batman and Superman versus vampires in a little sleepy town.
Oh, wow. Mm. Cool. Will also gave us some honorable mentions. He said, Thunderbolts Annual Number 1, it had Doctor Strange in it, X-Men Giant Size Annual Number 9, where they went to Asgard, and Number 10, which featured Longshot, and New Avengers Annual Number 1 for Doctor Strange. I'm guessing Will's a bit of a Doctor Strange fan.
Yeah, I've seen. Didn't he do a very good drawing of Doctor Strange?
He did too, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's an even bigger Doctor Strange fan now, right.
Yeah. Now, we didn't get a tweet from Dr. Ange.
No. Instead, we got an email. Let me read it to you, Paul. So Dr. Ange, he is the man, he writes to us and he says, you should know by now that even simple questions like, what is your favorite annual, cannot be answered with just one issue. I had a hard time limiting it to 4, and I'm not even including Secret Origins Annual Number 1 with a patrol. So Ange lists these annuals. Superman Annual 11, For the Man Who Has Everything. Fantastic Alan Moore Annual, where Mongol puts the Black Mercy flower on Superman, showing him what life would be like if Krypton hadn't exploded. It wasn't all rainbows and unicorns. Strong Batman and Wonder Woman in this issue as well, and it was made into an episode of Justice League Unlimited.
I know that one well.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. Damn it.
Ah, oh, you've got to read it, Mike.
I know.
It's in all the Alan Moore trades.
Okay. Next one that Angelus is Swamp Thing Annual Number 2, Down Amongst the Dead Men. Another Alan Moore issue. His Swamp Thing was such a delight of intelligent horror. This issue with Swamp Thing trying to save Abby's soul is just about perfect. Swampy gets a tour of the afterlife, heaven, purgatory, and hell, with his tour guides being Dead Man, Phantom Stranger, and Etrigan, and he faces off against Arcane.
It's a classic. Does, you should read that one.
It doesn't have Mentor in it, does it?
It doesn't. No. Okay. But it does lead up to the issue 50, which has Mentor in the issues leading up to that.
Okay, so I'll just read the annual, but not 50. Legion of Superheroes Annual Number 3, The Curse. Solid payoff to a one-liner Darkseid says at the end of the Great Darkness Saga. Validus turns out to be the Darkseid mutated son of Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad cast back in time. Holy jeez, that's...
Yeah.
I've just got a soap opera headache coming on now.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, sorry everyone. Validus has mental lightning. It makes perfect sense and kicks Darkseid up another notch as a Legion villain. Just eye-popping and surprising to read when it came out.
Yeah, that's another good one.
His final annual that he's listed is Supergirl Annual Number 2, Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes. Wonderful story by Sterling Gates that chucks the most homages and Easter eggs in a story that I've ever seen, from glimpses of prior Silver Age Supergirl/Legion stories to reigniting the Brainy/Kara romance to bringing back a classic Supergirl villain in Satan Girl, to having Kara be the impetus behind Saturn Girl's pink bikini costume. It is the sweetest of books, a fresh story which lovingly acknowledges continuity. And one more note from Ange. He says, the Doom Patrol Secret Origins Annual was one of the first times that it really hit him that Supergirl was erased from DC continuity. Yeah, tell us about it. There is a panel with the Patrol and Power Girl fighting Reactron based on a story where Supergirl and the Patrol fought him. Kara was gone, Karen was in. So, yeah, that's something that stood out to both of us, Paul.
Yeah. I wonder if Ange is looking forward to the Power Girl TV show coming out later this year.
Oh, wow. You did not.
Oh, I went there. Oh, I did.
Wow, you really did. What was your favourite annual, Paul?
Okay, now, the thing I like about annuals is when... I think my favourite ones are the ones that end a story. So you've had, like, several issues in the comic leading up, and then you have the finale in the annual.
Yes.
I think... So that's the case with some of those that he listed. And he listed some good ones there because they're ones I would like to mention. Like, that Swamp Thing one is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And for the man who has everything. But, so my favourite one is Firestorm Annual Number 5, mm-hmm. which is... basically, Firestorm is the merging of Ronnie Raymond and Professor Stein.
Yes.
And the lead up to this story was Professor Stein is dying. So he's got a brain tumor and he's going to die. And before he dies, he says to Ronnie, let's make a difference to the world. Let's go and take out all the nukes. And so they basically announce that they're going to do that. And so heroes and villains start coming and having a crack at them to stop them. And it all sort of culminates in an issue where the Suicide Squad get sicked on them. And at the end of that issue, before the annual, the Justice League show up. So things have really come to a massive head with this. So this issue, this annual, it's just full of great fights between these two teams and Firestorm in the middle. And then it has a really surprising ending and it sets up a whole new status quo for Firestorm, which ran for quite a bit. So... I like my annuals big and I like them to change things and to matter. So, and you don't get that with that many annuals these days at all, do you?
No. It's like an extra story these days rather than a big finale, which is awesome when that used to happen.
Yeah, and certainly these Doom Patrol annuals we looked at tonight don't fit that bill either. They're not the best thing you can imagine coming out of the character, are they?
Don't get me started.
Yeah, but you got to be careful saying Firestorm, because if you say it three times, Shag appears on your podcast.
Right.
What about you, Mike?
Mine, I had to think long and hard about this, because, yeah, I couldn't think of any that really stood out to me other than this one, Uncanny X-Men Annual Number 12, which came out in 1988. Now, in the late 80s to early 90s, I was big into the X-Men. X-Men were my jam before I discovered other things like Doom Patrol. I had to look up and research this again because I don't have the issue anymore, and it's been a hell of a long time since I read it, but I saw some images. It all came back to me. It was after the X-Men had basically sacrificed themselves to save the world. They were hiding out in Australia. The art was by Art Adams, and it was gorgeous stuff. I remember that standing out for sure. It was also written by Chris Claremont, so it was sort of back in that, really big important era for me with comic books and the X-Men in particular. It had them facing off against the High Evolutionary. There was a giant robot called Terminus that they were fighting. They had these other weird aliens turn up, and they were in basically like this giant kind of warship that was strapped to the back of a gigantic wolf. which they were then using to fight the giant robot in the middle of the Savage Land. It had Khazar as well and helped bring back the Savage Land. What the issue also had was a story set in the Mojoverse, which I'm not sure if everyone knows, but he's basically a giant blob in a robotic spider cradle thing. And he rules his universe through entertainment, basically. And he wanted the X-Men back. He wanted his own version of the X-Men. So they basically created these clones that were one team was all female versions of the X-Men. Another version was all Transformer robot versions. And then eventually they settled on the X-Babies. And I don't know what it is about the X-Babies, because they look more like young kids than babies, but it was just something weird about that issue that stood out to me. It was bizarre and batshit crazy, and like the X-Babies were just the backup story, and it was so weird, but it was really cool too. So other than that, I couldn't think of any other issue, any other annual that stood out to me. Other than that, I think it was Art Adams' artwork that really grabbed me more than anything. So
sorry, I just went to make a cup of tea.
Wow. That's cold, Paul. That's cold.
Yeah. I just don't have that connection to the X-Men.
Nor do I. Not anymore. But back in the day, that was something that stood out. Yeah. And also, yeah, the High Evolutionary was something that was weird that always stuck with me.
Why was he high? What was he on?
He was high on life and evolving it to a better form. So of course he had half beast men, half animal men sort of working for him.
You mistook that for a serious question.
You wound me, sir. You wound me. Anyway.
Alrighty. Well, I guess that's it for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We've just got to say goodbye and plug. Well, you can get in touch with Wilfred on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. The Waiting for Doom Facebook page is always a hotbed of occasional activity.
Very occasional.
Yeah.
What's our question of the week for next week, Paul?
We're so organized. I think the question will be, what's a cool mystery in comics that you liked? So what's something that was drawn out for quite a few issues, or even years, decades, what was a cool mystery? What was a mystery that, you know, entertained you while it was still mysterious?
Okay, cool.
We'll probably get an email from Ange, won't we?
Probably, yeah. Love you, Ange. Love you, man. And our focus for Doom Slaying next time is going to be the new 52 Doom Patrol.
I've got a caveat. I still need my book to arrive in the mail. Australia Post has gone from like weekly deliveries to occasional for quarterly deliveries at the moment. It's just terrible. So, like Moby and me, we both ordered this book at the exact same time from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
He got his 3 weeks ago. I haven't got mine yet.
Okay, how far apart do you and Moby live?
About 150 km.
Oh my god, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I'm in the country, so.
Right. Look, yeah. I'm sure we will have something sorted well and truly in time for next episode.
Yeah. I could just do a rant about Australia Post next week.
Okay. Our Australia Post is doomed because they don't patrol as well as they used to.
Well done, Mike.
That was a long bow to draw. All right, guys. That's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next time.
Bye, y'all.